the show.
Hi everyone, here we are for the Boundless Show. I'm your host Lisa Anderson in the studio today with three girls and a guy. Actually, there are three of us, including me and a guy. Steve, Ashley, and Suzanne, welcome all of you.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey, hi. Today's show, we're going to be talking about, we're going to do a culture segment, actually, with Bob W. back in the studio, Bob Waliszewski from PluggedInOnline.com to talk about upcoming movies. So stay tuned for that. And then during our inbox, we're going to actually talk about singles in the church again and kind of fighting some of those silos that we experience when it comes to ministry. So, but first, we're going to talk about spring relationships because it's spring. Aww. We've only recently received or come into spring here in Colorado. So
I don't know if it's even officially spring yet.
It's a little bit, yeah. I mean, we had like 3 days of crazy rain and we had some snow. I was actually in LA last week, but there was snow during that time. I realized we're not in spring here yet when I was out in LA because I was in Pasadena with all the roses and just the crazy flowers and all that kind of stuff. And that's not happening here yet. So
a lot of brown trees still.
Exactly. But, you know, because it's spring, that means that all kinds of people are just getting into relationships, right? Because that's how it's supposed to work out, like the Disney films. But but anyway, so let's talk about that a little bit. Do you think that there's a stereotype to that, or that the, you know, spring kind of perpetuates relationships, or...
When I went to Bible college, we had cherry blossoms. This was in Portland, Oregon, and they would fall in the spring, and we called it the pink mist because at the same time, you saw all the couples start to, you know, do their homework in the grassy fields and, you know, start to sort of form those new little relationships, and we always blamed it on the pink mist. So I think there's truth to it.
Huh. Suzanne, I agree with that as well. I think there's something to springtime in relationships. I'm not sure what it is. I think it might have something to do with the sunlight and all the vitamin D and being outside, and people are more likely to play games of frisbee or, you know, touch football and get those endorphins going. And so I think some of it just has to do with a general health in the spring. You're feeling better about, you know, the weather, about being outside, and you know that the sunlight and the amount of exercise you get definitely improves your mood. And so I think there's something to that. I know for myself, I've been dating since, I guess, September, so in the fall, and then dated in the winter, got engaged in the winter, and we're now in the spring. And I've enjoyed the spring season of our relationship more than any other part. It's just been way more enjoyable. I'm not sure what all that...
Yeah, what does that mean? Why is that more enjoyable?
I think it might have to do with our activities. We're going for walks after dinner and just spending more time outside. And so, you know, we go for hour-long walks and hold hands and stare into each other's eyes and all of that mushy stuff. I think that might have something to do with it. Just a more carefree set of activities that you can do instead of just watching a movie or reading a book, which I love reading books, but... You know, after being inside all winter reading books, I'm kind of tired of that.
Mm-hmm. When Candace and I were dating and it kind of had a fall-winter stretch of dating, I think it was the fact that there was an early spring in the air in February when we were in Virginia and we'd gone up to Williamsburg for the day. And I don't know, something about the warmth coming back that... I ended up spending some time at this place in a little wooded area on the Williamsburg campus and spent some time thinking and praying and writing. And there was something about the warmth and promise of spring and the days ahead, I think, that even helped me trigger thoughts about getting engaged, and ended up proposing just a couple of weeks after that. And then Candace and I spent our spring season planning our wedding. We ended up getting married in May, right around Memorial Day. And I don't know, it was a fresh life in the relationship over that period of time. It was a fun time to be engaged, and it was neat to kind of come out of some of the slow spots of the fall winter and kind of dive into all the goodness, newness, life of spring.
Mm-hmm. Something I've wondered about too is how much maybe a relationship starts to form at the beginning of the year with the whole New Year's resolution thing, and then everyone just avoids the Valentine's Day moment. Because I've noticed, I mean, every relationship I've ever been in has like past the February 14th mark, and then kind of like, okay, now we can start dating because that was awkward.
Oh yeah, I actually blogged about that. Yeah, as we were coming up on engagement, I intentionally decided to wait a week past Valentine's Day because I didn't want all the baggage of Valentine's Day to. I don't know. It felt like baggage.
Nice.
I just wanted to have a separate date.
I think that's so true, though, Suzanne, what you said, because I see that a lot, too. There's just kind of that whole new start, like the fresh start to a new year, where everyone says, certainly this year is going to be better than last year was in that. And even, you know, even for people like me who seem to have that the season of always winter but never Christmas. But, you know, I've dated people in the spring and I guess all seasons. But there is kind of that feeling like you're just turning over a new leaf. You're just starting. You're, you know, there are more opportunities out there. There is more, you know, that kind of plays out that way. But
I think we've talked on this show before about there's a day in, I don't know, February or something like that, where they said it's the most depressing day of the year because
January.
Of this combination of post New Year's resolutions, you know, that you've already broken, and the shortness of the days and the bills from Christmas and all the weight you gained at the parties at Christmas, or I don't know, I forget all the things that came together. So by this time of year, a lot of those things are looking better.
Mm-hmm.
Things are improving. And I think that could play into it as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think there's also, though, you know, you can look at the flip side of that and look at coming into a new year and saying, here I am in another year, and I'm still not married, I'm still not, all these things. And I think that can cause people to look or to reflect on the value of starting to date when you are younger and looking to marriage when you're younger, you know, what we would call the spring, you know, season of a relationship or of a person's life, I guess. And I know there was an article in the Washington Post recently that said, say yes, what are you waiting for? And we kind of read that here on this team and maybe had a couple comments about that.
Yeah, Mark Regnerus, who wrote that, talks about when you have the opportunity, especially in college, that there are so many stigmas against getting married, looking for relationship opportunities in college these days. Believe it or not, I mean, there are some people who would say, what are you kidding me? It's a lot of pressure on my campus. But in general, in the surveys he's looked at, that it really is on most campuses almost the sense of don't get distracted from education and career plans. Stay nose down. Relationship opportunities will still be there after college. This is really the time to get serious about your days ahead. That he's saying, don't overlook the value of this time to realize there are a lot of benefits, that just about all the concerns about getting married too early are past once you get into your 20s, once you get out of your teen years, and that really you're probably more ready for marriage than you think you are during the college years. And we've noticed that a lot of our friends, especially here at Focus, who are still single, look back on their college years and say, you know, there were some missed opportunities there. I talked to one guy who said, you know, it's so hard to date now, to squeeze it around work and so many other things. He said, I miss those carefree days of college when you could just spend all kinds of time together. He said, and I regret not being more intentional during that time.
Well, and I think there's often the, and we know the statistics that say, you know, divorces happen more often with the younger you marry.
Yeah.
But don't you think that that's, I mean, I think that it's definitely a give and take, because as you get older, you know, and you just get, quite frankly, some people just get crazy and you get a lot of baggage and you have all these issues. Marriage at a young age with healthy mentorship and with someone who, because I think you are more open, you're more malleable, you're more flexible, still kind of finding your own identity, having someone to walk alongside you and shape that with you and say, oh, no, you know, you two, you're both in the wrong here. Let's talk this through. The success rate would skyrocket.
In fact, Mark's colleague at the University of Texas, Austin, Norville Glenn, did a study for the National Fatherhood Initiative called With This Ring. And he said it was the first time they'd really gotten a sense that maybe there is a sweet spot, that there was so much concern about people getting married too soon and encouraging people to hold off a little bit longer, that there really hadn't been a lot of study of some of the downsides of delay. And they started noticing some drop in marital satisfaction of those who got married after 28. That's not to say that someone who marries after 28 is doomed to a bad marriage, but to say that they did identify that there was a drop-off, and they tied a lot of that to the fact that you get good at being independent, and then it gets a little harder to be interdependent, to have a relationship where you merge your lifestyles, your checking accounts, and all these things that you've gotten good at doing by yourself, and it makes it a little harder to become one with somebody else.
Mark even says in the research that people who marry before 20 who have a high divorce rate, but people 20, 21, 22 are more likely to be able to have a good long-lasting marriage because they're not set in their ways.
And you know, a lot of this, the pressure that people who are in their 20s, who are in relationships and thinking about marriage, the pressure they often get to hold off is their parents. Parents who say, you know, we got married at that age and we wish we had waited a little bit longer. There are things we missed out on. We were poor in those early years. But I think sometimes their parents overlook the benefits that came with that as well, and that they assume that everything would have turned out as good as it did even if they had waited five years later, and they don't take into consideration some of the downsides of delay, especially the increased sexual temptation. There, the couples now who are getting married are bringing much more complicated sexual histories, and not just like maybe their parents' generation, where maybe they had sex with the person they ended up marrying, jumped the gun a little bit before they got into marriage. Well, now it's more likely that someone's had four or five sexual partners before they get into marriage. And a lot of that baggage is tied to delay. And I would hate to think that well-meaning parents who see their son or daughter in a great relationship wouldn't push them into greater sexual temptation and other problems just because they think there's a magic number still in the years ahead, and keep them from taking advantage of what really could be a great potential marriage.
Mm-hmm. It seems, though, that in like the boomers' minds, 21 is the new 12. I mean, we've got this, you know, college kids are just kids in the minds of these folks. And I have friends 26, 27 who have been told by their parents, that's kind of young, you know, just, I mean, hello, what are we waiting for? So, I mean, there's this stigma almost of, you know, you're going to have to defend yourself if you're under 30 and getting married.
Well, and Mark, as well as some other writers we've seen, would say a lot of this is still boomer parents almost projecting onto their kids a lot of their own anxieties and worries and concerns, and not realizing that they need to let their kids jump out there, take some risk, make some mistakes, and that if they hold up the idea of the kids, what they would consider to be kids, to realize that there is power in the vows of marriage, and that you're not going to be perfectly mature and ready for marriage, because marriage is going to be a maturing process. But if the aptitude is there, and if the willingness to stick to the vows is there, they do have the potential to grow into it, and that there is something to be said for growing together instead of growing off independently and then trying to merge those complicated lives together.
I think that's true, but also I don't want, you know, people who are listening to this who are in their late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, 40s, whatever, to feel like somehow you're beyond hope for a good marriage, because, you know, those are great points. And I agree that I wrote an article called My Single Identity Baggage on Boundless, which talked a lot about just my realization that I do have a very complex identity. But the thing is if you are faithfully following Christ and you're praying for your future partner, that can all be overcome. And I'm happy to report that I'm in a relationship right now where that really is the case. The ways that I have developed my personality and my identity are a real asset to this relationship and to this other person. And so it's so encouraging for me to see that God is blessing my faithfulness just to do what he has called me to do throughout my 20s. And yeah, there might be, you know, some of those things to overcome, but in every marriage relationship, there will be things to overcome in every dating relationship. So, you know, don't be discouraged if you're a little past the spring and you're like, what?
Well, I think that's actually good. I mean, just as we have a couple minutes here to camp out on that, because we do have a lot of listeners who are in their late 20s, in their 30s, who are thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, my opportunity has passed. And they would love to be out on a college campus and reclaiming the past 10, 15 years and wishing that they had the opportunity to be in a pool of a bunch of folks and have all this opportunity, but they don't. And so what kind of encouragement can we offer to them, practically speaking?
I think you should just look to what, if you are past the spring and we look at the factors that come into play, you may be set in your ways, maybe you have this complex identity that you're trying to mesh with someone else. Just pray through those things and do a little self-examination and say, are there things that have developed in my life as I've gotten older that are a hindrance right now to a relationship or to marriage. And I recently heard Carolyn McCulley say, she was on the broadcast here with Dr. Dobson, and she said that, well, the question was asked, is it intimidating if a woman has developed all this success throughout her 20s, and will that keep men away from her? And Carolyn made a great point of, that's not so much the issue as, have you developed a hardness of your spirit that says, I don't need anyone because of all this success? So that's just one example of doing some self-examination and saying, hey, am I really putting myself in the best possible place to be open to a relationship that God might bring?
Something else to keep in mind is that one of the aspects of what we might call spring love sometimes actually borders on some of the infatuation and this burst of passion that research now tells us tends to wane 18 months to 3 years into the relationships. And that's a point at which a lot of divorces occur. So for people to realize that there is something there, I mean, that kind of a igniting launch that can take place, that can propel people into relationships, but that every good relationship has to move into this place of a more mature love, mm-hmm. where it is more self-sacrificing and not just looking to, just consume the exciting passion of this relationship. And for someone who has moved into their 30s and into a season that, you know, maybe doesn't feel quite as spring-like, for them to realize maybe they're even further along a lot of times in being ready and more mature, prepared for that deeper season that all good relationships need to go to. Mm-hmm. Just not wanting to go so far that they're moving into that season that I saw this one British writer doing a commentary on, where you move to the place where you get so calculated and so conservative and so careful that you're not able to jump out and take a risk again. You're not willing to open up your heart. So to realize there is value in that maturity and growth in life, but also there is something to be said for opening up your heart, for sure. a willingness to have new life in spring in your heart.
Well, this may be one of those instances. I mean, it may be you heard it here first on Boundless, but almost where it would be valuable for older men and older women, singles, to hang out with some of our younger counterparts. Because like, you know, you just reiterated it, Steve, how, you know, guys, as they get older, can become more about calculating risk. And maybe to see a younger guy in his early 20s, yeah. who, you know, feels he can conquer the world and feels he can just go up and ask anyone out. And, you know, if she turns him down, well, there, you know, someone else will come along. Yeah. Maybe some of that benefit will, you know, rub off on him, and that'll be good. And similarly for women, to hang out with younger women who don't have their ironclad lists yet, mm-hmm. and who aren't, you know, comparing every guy to John Piper or Al Mohler, or, you know, think that they're going to have to marry some spiritual giant, you know, as a guy should, you know, you would anticipate someone being, you know, as he's an older saint. But that could be interesting,
yeah.
an interesting dynamic. So, well, good. Well, these are good thoughts, folks. And I think it's good, especially to hear the perspectives from Ashley and Suzanne, as they're now in the middle of this and walking through this season and seeing it play out and that. So, of course,
and
we'll
I love
to,
spring.
Well, yeah,
my brother and sister-in-law, they started their relationship in spring, and my sister Becca, who just got married in October, she started her relationship in spring. So, it's it is an exciting time, and I think there's something to be said for it. So enjoy spring.
Well, good thoughts, everyone. Thanks. This week's music is provided by Gabriel, and here's a sampling of it right now.
You are my God, my one desire. That I live, it's you alone that has my heart. I will forever love you, and everything I lift you up. Who could compare to you, Lord? In all my life, I'll never find a deeper love in this.
everyone, and here we are with this week's culture segment. This time around, featuring again, as we love to do as often as we can, Bob Boleszewski from Plugged In Online. Bob, how are you doing?
I am doing good. And Lisa, it seems like it's been a while. Typically, we've been doing this more often, but I am glad to be back in the studio.
It has. But we had to give you some time because your ceiling was falling in over your office or whatever that was.
That so is true. We did have a little bit of flood, snow slash rain that caused the, people were wondering, what are you talking about? And I walk in and I had soaked papers everywhere. But those days are gone and life's good again and life
goes
on.
That is good. That is good. And we are actually heading into summer. We're well into May at this point, which is exciting. And heading into summer
because
means
this is summer blockbuster time. It used to be Memorial Day weekend, mm-hmm. but now the 1st of May mm-hmm. with X-Men.
Sure.
This weekend with Star Trek. And then we have Night of the Museum 2. We have the movie Up.
I always see it as you tell when this season is starting because people start sleeping outside. It's all the
Absolutely.
Midnight showings and all that craziness and super, comic book, heroes.
Yeah, well, X-Men made $87 million. Let's just put it that way.
So
just
the sheer
box office draw alone and those that put their tents up to be first in line, and they certainly will for Star Trek. And they'll dress up as one of the characters out of the original, et cetera. That'll go mm-hmm. on. So, yes, we are in the summer blockbuster time.
Okay. So we are saying now, this is maybe a little bit unprecedented because you're saying that out of the top 12 films, you have at least four that you like, which is a huge percentage.
Yeah.
For you.
I don't know if it's unprecedented, but it's been a while since and really there's two more on the list that there's something significant that I like about both of those. So almost half of the films in the top 12 have something very positive to say about, which oftentimes I've seen that list and it's like one film or sometimes no films.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's good. It's much better news coming to the microphones today than I have at times had to have.
Okay, so give us these four. What are you looking at?
Well, I really like Monsters and Aliens. It's been out a while, but it's still number 5 this week. The movie Earth, number 7 this week. Great film. I mean, if anybody hasn't seen that, go see that. It harkens back to the Walt Disney 1960s Sunday night films that we gathered around our TV sets that had tubes back in at the time to watch, and they were nature films with animals, and this one follows polar bears and whales and elephants, and it's terrific.
But are people going to get the billions and billions of years ago? These things crawled.
No, actually. And the nice thing, you didn't get the strong global warming point at your finger in your chest. Yes, well, there's thoughts about global change, but you didn't feel like you're on a guilt trip if you don't ride a bicycle to work, one of those kind of films.
Right.
The only thing I have to say negative about this film is really more for younger kids and maybe for some squeamish, collegians and adults, is the fact that animals do not go to McDonald's or Wendy's or IHOP for dinner. They do eat other animals, and there are some scenes, albeit off camera, but an animal catches an animal or they're on the back of another animal and dinner is in mind. So,
that's awesome.
But I love that film Earth.
Okay.
Also, I like the Hannah Montana movies. Also been out a couple weeks, but it's number 9 still. And a new movie last weekend, Battle for Terra, a 3D animated film. Just the 3D features are pretty cool. Of course, that goes with Monsters versus Aliens too. I love what they're doing with 3D these days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There are also a good number of the, those kind of date movies, the romantic comedies coming out too. And I know Ghosts of Girlfriends Past was big this weekend.
It was big. It was number 2.
Yeah.
I think all I need to say about this film was our opening sentence from our online review. We say, what if Ebenezer Scrooge had been a lingerie photographer? And what if instead of counting money, he counted notches on his bedpost?
Hmm.
And that really sums up that movie. Need I say any more about this supposedly possible date movie? No.
Right.
And the number 1 film in the nation this past weekend, X-Men Origins Wolverine. I wish I could say, wow, what an incredible film that everybody should see. But I think I also will defer to someone else's words rather than my own. This time, 20th Century Fox co-chairman Tom Rothman, who told Entertainment Weekly that the movie is very expletive, and we knew it would push the furthest limit of the PG-13. But once Dark Knight came out, we saw that there wasn't any level of intensity we couldn't go to, end of quote. So I agree with Tom Rothman when it comes to pushing the PG-13 for language, for violence. He's exactly right. I wish Tom had something else to say. You know, we looked at our last, the third X-Men film. We thought, you know, we pushed it a little too far. So we made this film for the whole family. But that isn't what he said.
So what are they supposed to be doing with these? This franchise is now going to go through each character and trace their own individual story?
This one definitely highlights Wolverine. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably the most popular Hugh Jackman's character, I think, for a lot of reasons. And he was voted People Magazine Sexiest Guy of the Year, so why not start there? Are they going to highlight other characters? Probably. Mm. I'm sure we'll see more films in the franchise. You open with $87 million, it's pretty sure they're not going to say this is the very last X-Men film.
Yeah, okay. So we obviously said we're heading into summer. Do you know of any summer releases that you have high hopes for at this point?
Yes, I have very high hopes for the Pixar film Up. I have moderate hopes for Night of the Museum, the Smithsonian version that's coming out in a couple weeks. Hmm. So we'll see.
Okay, so there are two movies you said, Bob, that you... you know, you say you can't heartily recommend them, but you did see something positive in them. What are those?
Absolutely. The number three film in the nation, Obsessed, Beyoncé Knowles. I know one of the reasons why this film is so popular is that being a former Destiny's Child member, a lot of her music fans followed her into the theater. But there was something about this movie that I really liked. In fact, I'll put it this way. They could show scenes of this movie in Promise Keepers events to encourage men to show how to say no to seduction, and it would be greatly encouraging because the plot revolves quickly around a temp in an office who's trying to seduce her new boss, and he just says he's married. He just says no, 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 no. And he never does say yes. Hmm. And even though his hedges aren't quite as high as sometimes as high as I'd like him to be, mm-hmm. I love the way he does that. Mm-hmm. Now, but it takes a weird ending. It was almost like the writers didn't know where to go with it, so they decided to make it violent. So unfortunately, for that reason and some language, I don't recommend it, but I loved the pro-fidelity message of this film.
Yeah, because I heard it had kind of a hand that rocks the cradle kind of twist. I mean, the woman's just crazy, and there's a lot of deception and a lot of, sketchiness as far as that goes. But like you said, the message... that underlying message is a good one.
It was. It was really good. And I want to give kudos to and hats off to where they're due on this one. The second movie that's also one that I can't wholeheartedly recommend, but there's a lot about the film that I really, really liked, was the movie The Soloist. Robert Downey Jr. and Jamie Foxx. By the way, Jamie Foxx, I thought, was extraordinary in this film. Plays a mentally handicapped man suffering from schizophrenia. He's homeless in L.A. It's based on a true story. And this L.A. Times journalist, in writing a story, interviews him, finds out what an incredible musician he is, and wants to change him. But then the movie asks the question, if you can't change him, should you still be his friend? And the movie answers it rightly. There are some language issues. This would be a perfect film someday to put through a Clearplay machine. But I thought the message of reaching out to the down and out or the hurting, the homeless, the mentally ill was incredible. I love that message.
Well, and we know, Bob, that Star Trek actually comes out this weekend, and that has quite the cult following that has followed this franchise, I guess, for what, going on 40 years now, starting way back in the day with the TV show. But you're going to be reviewing that now.
Yes. And in fact, our review is online today. So people who want to get, we'll tease this one a little bit. People who want to see what we say about this one can go to pluggedinonline.com for the full story on this one. In fact, for that matter, anything playing at their local theater or anything out on DVD for about the past 10 years.
Okay. I think I bought a box of Corn Pops like 4 weeks ago, and there was already a Star Trek like flashlight thing in it. So, the merchandising and all the madness surrounding that is
X-Men
is craziness.
Will quickly become the second most popular film. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Bob, as always, it's a pleasure. Folks who are listening, as you well know, you can find more about these movies and others as they're coming up, as well as music and video games and everything else that's out there that can be called entertainment at pluggedinonline.com. So make sure you check it out. And make sure that you check it out actually before you go to see these movies.
Thank you, Lisa.
You don't have to like talk about them afterwards and say, I wish I wouldn't have seen that, or I should have walked out, or I should have whatever. We all know the lesson I learned watching Dodgeball. So let's not get into that again. So again, Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Lisa.
What have I done to deserve this love? I can't imagine how you love me. You always show me how much I mean to you. Oh, how you show me your mercy.
Up today's inbox. I'm back in the studio with Steve. Steve, good to have you here.
Yeah, this is fun. I think I've been gone a month now. It's great to be
back.
We're
just adding so many people into the mix, you know. It's like now we have to put you on a list. That's okay, though.
That's a good thing.
Steve is going to address a question from Mary, and Mary says, my church has a great singles group and a great singles pastor. The group is only a couple of years old and consists mostly of 20-year-olds. My question is, how can I get the rest of the church, mainly the head pastor, involved with the singles group? I know I'm not saying this right, but no one outside the singles group seems to have much of anything to do with us. Married people form one clique and seniors another. The pastor preaches constantly on marriage and parenting, but no one talks to the singles. You talk about getting a mentor, but beyond the single pastor's wife, there is a real lack of anyone who I think would fit that bill. The head pastor won't attend any single activities we have. I really appreciate all that my church does for singles, but what can I do to desegregate my church?
Well, Mary, this is something that I can't say I had a lot of experience with as a single. I didn't find any creative ways to get the church that I was a part of to do more with singles or anything like that. But I have noticed enough of people writing with similar questions, trying things, that you're probably not going to have a whole lot of success just sitting down the pastor and asking for, you know, more involvement. It's really probably going to come down to the singles making the determination that you are going to go out and not wait for the church to finally figure out that it works best to be desegregated, but that you're going to have to take the lead in mixing things up a little bit, in actually looking for service opportunities, events that you can host, things that you go out of your way to do to partner with other areas of the church that have drifted into that segregated area. I have heard of some creative things people have done in terms of initiating a Habitat for Humanity type project so that they can specifically bring their singles group alongside another group in the church so that they can spend a day working together. And there's nothing quite like work that gets people to know each other. And you start recognizing opportunities that are there. Or even people around holidays, Easter or Christmas, creating opportunities that they can join together with another segment of the church to do an event together, whether it's going to a nursing home or anything like that. But I just really encourage you to think about how God's gifted you, think about the needs that are in the church and in the community, and start there of being in settings where you're using those gifts and talents and energy availability that you have to meet needs and to invite other people who have similar giftings to come alongside and be a part of that as an entry point.
Yeah. Yeah, Mary, I would say I think it starts as a perception issue. I mean, obviously the best thing, you know, your church could do is just, you know, fire the senior pastor and hire one that's single and only have single ones from then, because then he's living through that stage with you and you can just chat with him about it. But that not being a possibility, I think it's a perception issue in that, you know, I'm in a singles group at my church and I go to a relatively large church. And you have to make the singles get out of that mentality or that perception that they're just another youth group, that they're just another me group of people that just want to be ministered to and fed and don't want to contribute on the backside of that and do anything in return. I mean, the fact is people in singles groups are adults. We should be contributing, as Steve said, to the church body, to families in the church, to the staff of the church. And I think, you know, you were talking about the pastor doesn't come to any activities you have. Well, you know, if you're just saying, hey, we're going to go bowling or do mini golf or whatever, or have a lock-in, you know, or something crazy, why don't you come to it? He's going to be like, ah, I hate it. He's not going to do that. But if you do things that are more friendly to people in other stages of life, like, you know, host a dinner and have your pastor and his wife, yeah, you know, just where a few of you are single, you're not accosting him and his wife with all 85 of you or something and your various issues. The key is to allow people from different stages of life in your church to get to know you as a person and not just have you identified or labeled as, oh, another single person. Because the fact is, you know, you are a fellow believer, you are a fellow contributor to the life of the church. And I know what's really worked for me in the past year and two, especially, is to really become a part of some of the committees at my church, mm-hmm, and to provide input in really the direction that our church is going in. And I'm doing that now. In fact, looking at a part of a committee that we're looking at a church plant. I live downtown here in town. So they invited me to be part of that, just to, you know, give a perspective on that, as well as a team that we have, an adult ministry team that kind of casts a lot of the vision for how we're going to do ministry at the church. And so, and being part of that, Mary, is what I want to say, that now these fellow committee members all of a sudden know me as Lisa and not just like someone who's in the singles group. Yeah. And all of a sudden they have a vested interest in my life. They care about what's happening to me. I am getting them all on my marriage team. Hello, people. EJ and all you folks out there listening, you better be up to the task. So it's just a good way to do that.
That also ties into something I heard from someone here at Focus on the Family who heads up the work we do with people who are over 50. And she talks about the value of reverse mentoring, that instead of just looking for someone who can provide some direction input in your life, that there are actually a lot of people over 50 that if you can find some ways to come alongside them, they recognize a lot that you have to contribute, especially in terms of technology and insights you may have picked up from your education, from your career path, that there are plenty of ways that you can plug in and serve. And I think people who begin to see you using your gifts and your education and things like that, there would be more interest that they would have in being able to spend time with you. And then you begin to recognize how much you are able to contribute to each other within the body of Christ, which is how God designed it from the beginning.
Exactly. So Well, Mary, hopefully this is helpful to you, gives you a few thoughts. And I would certainly recommend as well to get some of your friends there who are single to kind of join you in this crusade. I mean, you don't want to just strike out on your own and single-handedly invite every member of the staff of your church to start doing things. But if a small group of you can kind of get on board and get going with that, I think people will catch on and will want to get to know you and want to start investing in you given the opportunity. So, Steve, thanks for weighing in on the question and being a part of that. So, as always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org with your questions and your concerns, comments on the podcast. And we always try to address your questions here on the show as they come in, and we get them from a wide range of topics. So that is fantastic. We love it. I also have to say, shout out to whoever sent me a Christmas card. They didn't even sign their name. They sent me a Christmas card now in April. It was awesome. It was handmade, which was hilarious. So that was fabulous. They were listening to old episodes, Steve. Isn't that hilarious?
Oh, that's right.
They're like, here's my Christmas card.
I think you also got a great Easter card, too. I remember one coming in. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen the Easter card yet.
Oh, really nice card.
Yeah. Hello, you guys are hoarding. Okay, well, if you sent me an Easter card, I'm going to try to find it.
Lost in interoffice mail.
Lost in there somewhere.
Go through that effort.
So all that to say, we want to be a part of your lives, and we want that vice versa. So please do stay in contact with us. And again, this week's music is from Gabriel, so make sure you take a listen and check his music out. We'll feature it here at boundless.org. Until next week, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.